Hello, listeners. It's Bryn and Aaron coming at you with another easy breezy mini episode of That Was a Show.
Good intro. I like that.
You like that?
I like that. We grew up during peak sitcom, Seinfeld, Friends, The Fresh Prince, but those shows were diamonds in the rough. This podcast is not about those diamonds. It's about the rough. Some sitcoms were briefly popular in their time. Some were canceled almost immediately. You probably won't recognize most of these, and you'll ask, that was a show?
That was a show?
The podcast about failed or forgotten sitcoms from the 80s and 90s, starring
Bryn Burney,
Aaron Yeager,
and Andrew Helmer as Barry.
A Radio Gizmo production.
So it's just the two of us today, me and Bryn. Barry's taking a break, and so we're doing a rewatch episode.
Yay!
And for this rewatch, I chose The Single Guy, and for a very specific reason.
Okay.
So one thing that occurred to me was sometimes we're talking about a show and, you know, we usually just watch two episodes. We do our best to choose two that we think are going to be representative of the breadth of what they've accomplished
in these
short-lived series. But occasionally we're talking about the show and we realize that there's a third episode or some other scene or thing that we did not get a chance to watch, but we kind of wish we did because we start speculating on it and talking about it a bit anyway. And when we talked about The Single Guy, we discussed an episode that features a cameo appearance from Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And we talked all about how her husband, Brad Hall, is the creator of the show. And it was on in between Friends and Seinfeld. So we speculated that that's why she appears in an episode of the show. So at the time, we kind of just let that go by and said, yeah, we don't know exactly what happens in that episode, but whatever. And I got to thinking like, yeah, if I could go back and watch one more episode of a show that we've already reviewed, you know, this is not the first time I've brought this up, but like if I was pressed to choose a favorite sitcom performer from that decade, it would have to be Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah, I mean, you're obsessed with her. You're like in love with her.
So the fact that
she's your sitcom crush.
Sure. I don't know if that's the description I would use, but
I would.
I just admire her comedic stylings and abilities. And so even if not for the fact that this show was created by Brad Hall, or that it was on adjacent to Seinfeld, I think the fact that she appears in an episode of the show, and she actually hasn't done like a ton of sitcoms where she's not one of the starring roles. Like that's not, she's not one of those actors who has like 100 credits in random parts in a whole bunch of different shows. So the fact that it's an opportunity to see her in a completely different character is intriguing. That's like my reason for wanting to see this. But I also seem to recall that The Single Guy of the last dozen or so shows that we've reviewed was one of your favorites as a show that you actually enjoy.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, it's definitely one that I watched a lot as a kid.
Okay, so it's a show.
Like, it's not necessarily my favorite now. I did enjoy it. I definitely enjoyed revisiting it. But it was more that I just remembered so much of it and that it was like a show I was a fan of at the time.
Okay, maybe that's the way I should have described it, is like a show that you enjoyed reviewing.
Yeah.
A show that you were excited to see.
Yeah, no.
So,
it's okay, Aaron. You don't have to be 100% accurate with your descriptions.
So
we can do what we want with this podcast.
I guess we can. It's our podcast. So we have not watched the episode yet. We're doing this process live-ish.
Yeah.
So-ish. We're going to pause our recording now.
Okay.
We're
going
to watch the show, and then we'll be right back after these messages to discuss. Okay, well,
all right.
that was a very enlightening experience.
Yeah, yeah. It was a fun episode.
Fun episode.
I enjoyed it. Should you just go ahead and describe the plot of the episode to our audience?
Quick, impromptu, non-written, as you know, I usually write incredibly
detailed. Yeah, he usually has pages and pages of notes.
This is just off the cuff. Basically, the main character in the
Jonathan,
single guy, Jonathan, he's, I guess the backstory is that he's dating a woman who is played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And at the start of the episode, he's hanging out with his friends and he tells them that she let him know that she wants to meet him for dinner and they need to talk about something important. And based on her tone, he thinks that she's probably going to break up with him. And so they're discussing strategy of how he could potentially like
dodge it,
somehow dodge that, which is a very George Costanza type of plotline. And then the twist that happens, long story short, is that they go out for dinner. He brings all the friends along, thinking that this will somehow create enough of a diversion that he can somehow
get out of being dumped.
Get out of being dumped, which I don't really get. Like, I mean, what? That's so it'll delay it by a day? Like, I don't really know what the end game of that is. But anyway, all the friends are there. And then when they leave dinner, they're all going for a walk. He's trying to keep the night going, keep all the friends with them. And they get mugged in an alleyway. And this actually sets in motion a pretty interesting plotline, because the way each of the characters reacts post-mugging is it splinters off into a few separate plot lines, which is actually entertaining.
Well, yeah, it's entertaining and it's a great plot device.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. It's like an inciting incident for four different plot lines.
Yeah.
So it's actually like a really smart.
Yeah, very clever structure.
Writing structure.
Yeah. So as you go, presumably from like act one to act two, it splinters off into these plot lines. So the most interesting one, the one that we're all here for, is, of course, the fact that it turns out, I don't remember her name.
The character's name. It was not that
But anyway, I'm just going to say, you know, Julia's character turns out to be really like the adrenaline rush of getting mugged and having a gun pointed at her creates some sort of rush.
It basically unlocks a kink she didn't know she had.
this like danger kink. So when they're all back at the apartment after, she tells him she really needs to talk to him. She can't keep putting this off or whatever. She drags him out to the balcony of the apartment. And then
and he assumes she's finally going to dump him. But then she like is like aggressively trying to get him to like, you know, fool around with her, and she like balances on the balcony railing and all this crazy stuff.
Yeah, she's like, oh, we're really up high. And she kind of leans over the railing. Yeah. So, and then they end up leaving and going to his apartment and having sex. And then thus ensues a whole thing where she becomes addicted to the danger and the rush of the, the thrill of the danger.
So she keeps doing more and more risky things and engaging in risky things. And then Jonathan sort of like goes along with it because he likes, you know, all the passionate encounters that they have after.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like a thing where he's getting flustered because he can't handle, you know, all the hijinks, but he likes what, you know, the outcome of it for himself.
So
he's conflicted there.
Yeah, he's conflicted, but he's managing to sort of try to keep up with her thrill seeking and danger seeking.
And he nicknames her Danger Girl. And so they all start calling her Danger Girl behind her back.
As if it's like a superhero with an alter ego she's been hiding. Danger Girl. So that's that plot line. And we'll explain where that ends in a moment. But just to set up the others. So the one of his friends, the one who runs.
Sam. Yeah.
So
Joey Slotnick's character.
So as the mugging is happening, as soon as it starts, like someone jumps out of behind a dumpster or whatever and is like, give me all your money. He immediately just books it. Like
and leaves all of his friends and his wife,
and
Trudy.
He just runs away as fast as he can. Afterwards, he's not ashamed of it. He's just like, this is how all of my ancestors have survived for a million years. And he's like, it's. And he's accused of being a coward. And he's like, no, coward implies that I like assessed the situation and chose to flee. He's like, this is just my automatic instinct. Like, he made some reference to like a gazelle fleeing a lion or whatever. And his wife, Trudy, is it?
Yeah.
She doesn't even seem to be bothered by it. She's just like, yep, that's just, you know, he just flees. When there's trouble, he flees.
She says, I find it attractive, which I found to be a bit of a...
bit of a stretch.
It's a bit of a, like, what's the word? Contrived line.
Yeah,
but,
contrived.
But,
I don't know.
It was fine.
Yeah. But whatever. She's also like the wild card character and kind of the funniest character on the show. So,
Yeah,
in general, she was really good in this episode, but that line in particular seemed a little forced. But anyway, that's what happens with them. And then the other couple, you know, the actors, don't know the character
Jessica
names.
Jessica Hecht and what's his name? Duck Phillips.
Duck Phillips on Mad Men. Anyway, they're this other married couple, for those of you who recall.
Well,
it's
Jonathan's, she is Jonathan's friend. We should have had these character names, Aaron. Come on.
She's Jonathan's, like, best friend since childhood.
Okay.
And her
husband.
I'm going
to pull this up now. Real time.
Yeah, so while you're pulling that up, I'll just explain that their reaction to the mugging was, and I guess they have a young child, they decided, okay, the city is now too dangerous for us. We're not comfortable here because we have a kid and we don't want to go through that again. So they decide to move to Connecticut and buy a house in the suburbs.
Yeah. The couple's name is Matt and Janine. Okay. So Janine is Jonathan's like childhood friend, like best friend. And then Matt's her husband. And the other characters... Anyway, yeah, it's fun. So they're in this process of looking for a house in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because it's kind of a relatable thing because the other friends like Jonathan and Trudy and Sam are like really upset that they are thinking of leaving. And yeah, we can relate to this because we, you know, we're, you know, at that stage of life where people are like, you know, moving out of the city and moving to the suburbs. And it's always like, no, why? Don't leave us.
Yeah. And we're the city stalwarts. And we have friends who've left to the suburbs. So can definitely relate to that.
Can
plot
relate
point.
To that. And so they're just bugging them, like they're going along with them, which is weird. I don't know why they're going to these house viewings with them. But
yeah, that I mean, again, that's a contrivance. But overall, although there are a few contrivances, overall, pretty strong plot structure, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think when we watched it a little while back, like we all agreed it was very clever. It was a very clever show. So it's just, like, it's good writing. It's like very good performers. But yeah, I feel like it's basically, you know, the same show that existed already a lot. So it just like, it's like, you know, clever, witty people living in New York who had good banter.
Yeah.
And it's like we've seen it time and time again. So it's kind of like one of those things where it didn't have anything quite as special as Seinfeld or Friends to really give it that extra bit of juice to be more
to really
noteworthy
stand out. And
but as a show, it is like a fun, it is
good.
Like a fun hangout show.
Yeah.
The one thing I'll say is like, again, it's the thing that always annoyed me about Friends is the fact that these people live in New York City and they're always just hanging out in apartments. And it's like, okay, yeah, like that's, you know, you kind of have to do that for the purpose of a sitcom. But it's like, it's also like, you know, and even if they don't have a lot of money to spend going out, they're still going to go out. Like they're still going to go and hang out at some dive bar or something. They're not just going to be at each other's apartments all the time.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
And I will say like, that, like, this show, and again, like, you know, this episode may not be representative of every episode, but, like, we've talked about this on various shows, how it was pretty typical that most sitcoms in the 80s and 90s, when they make reference to plot points that happen outside of the main one or two sets, they just talk about it after the fact. So someone makes a reference to like, so Danger Girl is like, let's walk home through Central Park, walk like, yeah. walk me to my place through Central Park. And he's like, but it's past midnight. She's like, exactly. And yeah. and it's like, but they don't show them go outside. Yeah, they don't show them go to Central Park.
Although, okay, so technically the whole group did go out together because they were trying to basically prevent, like, him, like, Jonathan from being dumped. But they were very briefly at a bar or restaurant. Yeah. And then they, were all walking through a dark alleyway together.
You've got the two main apartments. You've got the alleyway scene at the beginning, which was necessary for that inciting incident.
Yeah.
You've got the restaurant scene.
Yeah.
You've got a house viewing in what's supposed to be Connecticut.
Yeah.
So that's not bad.
Like, that's actually not bad. Now that we're, like, actually breaking it down, I'm just kind of actually disproving my point.
Well, no. But that's not bad in the sense that that's the level of stretch that a show like Friends would have probably done.
Yeah.
What makes Seinfeld special is they would have shown Central Park. They would have shown viewings and multiple house look. Like, they would have anything that's referenced, they would have been willing to go to.
Yeah. So speaking of Seinfeld, like, obviously, like, this was like, was this after Seinfeld was over?
Nope.
It was still happening. It was in its final season, probably.
This would have been around season 7 or 8 of Seinfeld.
Oh.
So this is when Seinfeld was at its peak. 98.
But yeah, like, so she was, like, very firmly Elaine Bennis at the time.
Very much so.
And and the thing is, like, okay, so she did a huge solid for her husband, obviously, by guest starring in this, in his show, but they, like, went out of their way to make her look as different from Elaine as possible. Like, they put her in this weird, like, red page boy haircut wig.
Like, yeah.
You know, like, so she's, like, this redhead instead of her, you know, signature Julia Louis-Dreyfus curls. And
what's interesting is in the opening scene in the restaurant where we first meet the character and we can tell that she's kind of trying to get him alone so she can have a serious talk with him, and she probably is gonna break up with him.
Yeah.
But she's, like, a pretty natural, subdued, like, very realistic person in that first scene. Like, she's not, like, a big sitcom-y performance. Yeah. And I was like, oh, is this her in, like, the show? She's, like, trying to really tone it down to be different from Elaine.
Yeah.
But once she becomes Danger Girl.
Yeah, exactly.
Once she becomes,
then it's like, all right, like, there's the bombastic
Once the
performer,
like,
we know,
the danger kink comes into play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then she goes big.
Yeah.
Then we get to see some, like, really quite good physical comedy.
Yeah.
There's a scene where she, like, scales the fire escape and comes into the window with a crowbar. And she's, you know, she's, like, half his size. Like, he's a pretty tall dude. And she just, like, one hand throws him over the back of the couch onto the couch and stuff. and yeah, she's very funny at physical comedy. And so I'm glad that we got to see that.
They used her well.
Yeah.
There was a lot of very 90s stuff in here. It was like, you know, this episode would have been made in 1996 and it was, like, as 1996 as possible.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, in the opening, the cold open, they're, like, talking about going to the video store. So the setup is that, you know, like, they're all going to hang out as friends. And, like, Sam had gone to the video store to get him something. And it made Aaron and I both just be like, aw, video stores.
Because
we're always so nostalgic for a video rental store.
He comes in bragging about how he was able to pick a movie really quickly and get back from the video rental store quickly by sticking to a particular, like, going in with a plan. If you're going for action and adventure, don't get sidetracked into romantic comedy or whatever. You got to pick a plan, stick with it. And immediate nostalgia. or as Don Draper would describe it, the pain from an old wound, which I think those of us our age actually genuinely feel when we think of the loss of video rental.
The youngsters will never understand.
Never
understand, like, that experience of going there and just, it was just such a, like, it was a thing we took for granted, right? We don't have it now. And it's like, you know, it was so normal to just, like, go there, pick out a movie, maybe get some snacks, like.
Yeah.
And there'd always be a whole thing to, like, depending on who you were with and who you're watching a movie with. Like, if you were a kid and you're with your parents, it was like, you know, you might have to argue with what you wanted to rent. It's like, oh, that's not appropriate for you. Or, well, I mean, that didn't happen much for me. My mom didn't always pay attention. But anyway, like, and then if you're with your friends, it was always like, you know, oh, so-and-so likes dumb, like, action movies. And, you know, so it's just like, I don't know, it's just something that...
Yeah,
it's so specific to that era.
It's a real cultural touchstone. Yeah. And, you know, the recent movie Everything Everywhere All at Once, that title is a great metaphor for the prevalence of content today, because now it is Everything Everywhere All at Once. And in that era, up until
it was very curated.
The end of 90s, it's like you go to the one or one of a couple video stores that were reasonably close to where you lived. And sometimes you'd go in wanting a particular movie and guess what? Someone else already rented it. So you don't get to watch it.
Yeah.
You just don't get to.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't get to until like a week or two later because it's just been, sometimes they're even reserved.
Yeah.
So you can't even rent that movie.
Yeah, exactly. You have to like wait an entire week or more.
Or a month.
You need to have to ask the person there, like, when's it due back? Like a library book. If you think about it like a library book, that's kind of what it was like at times. Like,
yeah.
It's wild.
And like, sure, it was a lot cheaper than going to a movie theater, but you were still paying real money for like one particular movie that was due back in like a day or two. So it's not like you'd watch 10 minutes of it and decide, nah, not for me. Like, no, you've committed. You've made your choice. And now you're going to watch that movie and like it or not.
And you got to rewind it before you bring it back. Anyway, this was an epic tangent.
Epic tangent.
Other 90s classics were, you know, so her Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character had a mini backpack purse that the other women commented on, which was such an iconic thing. Like when I was like 11, I got my first mini backpack and it was like the best day of my life because it was like such a smooth transition from being like a little girl to like a preteen, because it was like a backpack, but it was also my purse. And I got to like carry around a purse without my peers being like, why do you have a purse? Like, that's weird. But it's a backpack. But that was like the height of fashion. And
you seem excited now just talking about
it. I am. It was such a fun. And I think they brought it back for a little bit. I think the little Gen Zers were wearing mini backpacks for a bit. Maybe they still are. But anyway, mini backpack.
Also, like a couple little, you know, connections to the adjacent shows. As I said, like, you know, that this was kind of a George Costanza plot. I remember there was an episode where he thought that this particular woman he was dating was planning to break up with him, and he's trying to dodge her and avoid her so that she can't. Yeah. I believe one of the lines of dialogue on the whole, like, she needs to talk thing is like, nobody needs to talk. and of course, most people will know that episode as the one that features George's epic answering machine message.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Leave a message.
Please leave a message at the beep. So, and that was his way of like just not answering the phone. Because if he answers the phone, she might break up with him over the phone. Anyway. Also, the balcony scene, it looked a lot like the Friends balcony.
It did look like the Friends balcony. Yeah.
I don't know if it was the same set or if that's just a common New York
Ross,
balcony.
But like Ross was like, oh, but who was a neighbor of his? It was like Ross, right? Or he wasn't a neighbor. He just met them.
Who are you talking about?
Remember the episode we watched where Ross was friends with Jonathan?
Yeah.
And I was... the Friends balcony and the Friends connection and all of that.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But it wasn't that his place. It was the girl's place that you're thinking of.
Yeah, it was Rachel and Monica's apartment.
Okay. Anyway, yeah.
Nevertheless, maybe that's a common New York balcony. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
There was a funny bit, like a good laugh I had was like when it seems like Julia's character busted into the apartment with the crowbar, like there were witnesses out on the street that saw someone scaling the building and break in. So Ernest Borgnine, who's like the doorman at the building, comes rushing into his apartment with a sock full of pennies. It's so funny because he comes in with this like sock with something in it.
Yeah.
And there's a whole dialogue exchange before even addressing that.
Yeah.
And we're both like, is that a sock full of pennies?
Yeah.
And then Jonathan's like, what's in your hand? And he's like, oh, it's a sock full of pennies.
Well, you said quarters, actually.
You're right. I said quarters.
Yeah. But I mean, you don't want to lose a bunch of quarters.
You're
quarters
right.
is big money.
Pennies
so.
Is a much more rational choice. And also that payoff to the whole thing of like the couple who's going to buy the house in Connecticut. They're so into it. They're ready to like make an offer.
Yeah.
And then they say to the like real estate agent, like, hey, why don't we go out for dinner and we'll talk about our offer? Let's go for some Chinese food. And she's like, I don't know if that's going to work. Like, there's no Chinese restaurant in this town. The nearest Chinese place is probably about a 40-minute drive. And it just like cuts to them like their eyes are bugging out of their face. And then it just like hard cuts to like Chinese takeout back in Manhattan.
In Manhattan.
And yeah, they're not going to take the house.
And they're not going to take the house because there's no Chinese food restaurants.
Yeah, which like... Again, I can relate to that as like one of the reasons why I like living in a city is just like if I want literally any kind of food any day of the week on any whim, I have a reasonable confidence that I can find it. I do value that. So that's all my notes.
Yeah, I mean it. Yeah, I mean that. What else can you say? It was a fun episode and. You know, it was a good rewatch. I mean, I feel like doing these little mini-sodes, it's fun because you get like a slightly, you know, deeper dive into some of these shows we cover. So,
yeah, you do.
Might as well.
And this was my favorite, I think, out of now the like three or four single guy episodes that I've seen.
Yeah.
This is probably my favorite.
Yeah, it's fun.
And not just because Julia Louis-Dreyfus was in it. But like in an unbiased way, genuinely, I thought this was like the best plot structure and kind of most entertaining.
Yeah.
Like it really worked as an episode of late 90s sitcom. It really worked.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you like other popular shows from that era, like there's a good chance you'll like this.
Yeah,
it works
I think
well.
So. Yeah. Why not? Check it out.
Check it out. So, While we're here having a little chit chat, we also just want to give a shout out of support to the writers in the United States, the WGA.
The WGA members keep fighting the fight. You know, if anyone out there is curious about, you know, just the realities of working in that medium, like the reason a lot of these 90s TV shows and 80s TV shows that we cover existed. Was because there was a lot of work back then and there was like, you know, networks in the age of actual network television. They were able to pay people and they were able to, you know, like people earned residuals. They earned a good living. So they were able to take these big swings and make shows that were a little bit wild. And that's why you have like so many failed or forgotten and successful shows like these. Like, you know, writers in that area, in that era, you know, they could make a real stinker and still get a better job and like have a good life. I mean, we're not experts on it, but.
But also like any art, any craft requires time and practice. And like, so it just makes sense that, you know, not all, you know, obviously not all the shows that we review on our podcast are the most memorable shows.
Yeah.
But the people who worked on these shows. Are often people who go on to do other like really great shows
that
you
totally.
Love. And like the shows, whatever it is, whatever show that you think is like your favorite show of all time, probably would not exist if those writers had not been able to earn a living writing on a whole bunch of different things, good and bad, over the course of many years.
Again, want to just express our support to all the writers and all the other showbiz folks who are supporting the writers and keep fighting the fight. Because we all want to keep watching great shows.
Exactly.
And see you get paid for your work.
All right. Well, this was fun. Until next time.
Thanks for listening.
And cut to credits. That That Was a Show is created and hosted by Bryn Burney, Andrew Barry Helmer, and myself, Aaron Yeager. It's a production of Radio Gizmo in Toronto, Canada. Subscribe, rate, review, and share. Follow us on Instagram and tell your friends about it. That Was a Show.
Radio Gizmo.